And I think what that day to this demonstrates is how far we've come as a country.
Australia faces a controversial day. It's Monday, January 25th. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson. Follow us online at VOA Asia Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, India helps its neighbors. President Biden seeks more vaccinations. The world greets the new president. Changing diplomacy. Expanding space exploration. It's all on today's VOA Asia. Australians again are facing an important date on the calendar, and Prime Minister Scott Morrison has defended the date of the National Day holiday and has criticized cricket bosses for omitting the words Australia Day from promotions for their matches. January 26th has been a controversial date. The first fleet of British convicts arrived on that day in 1788, but Aboriginal groups mourn what they call Invasion Day. Increasingly, there is a push in multicultural Australia to change the date of the national holiday to reflect Indigenous sensitivities. We hear more from Phil Mercer in Sydney.
Australia's National Day is controversial because it's held on a date marking British colonisation. Aboriginal Australians have led the charge for it to be commemorated at a different time of the year. Cricket bosses have removed the term Australia Day from promotional material for matches because they insist it was a time of mourning for many Indigenous players. Prime Minister Scott Morrison, though, wasn't happy.
Look, I think Australian cricket fans would like to see Cricket Australia focus a lot more on cricket and a lot less on politics.
Australia Day has been a national public holiday since 1994. Morrison believes January 26 is a significant date.
It's all about acknowledging how far we've come. When those 12 ships turned up in Sydney all those years ago, it wasn't a particularly flash day for the people on those vessels either. And I think what that day to this demonstrates is how far we've come as a country. And I think that's why it's important that we mark it in that way.
Historians say the first fleet of British convicts comprised 11, not 12, boats. Mick Dodson, a celebrated Indigenous activist, believes the Prime Minister's broader grasp of history is poor.
He seems to have a total lack of empathy of the impact of the British coming to Australia on Aboriginal people. There's no empathy there at all. It's all about self-praise and aggrandisement of white fella colonisation. He's very lightweight when it comes to understanding Australian history.
Many Australia Day events this year are being scaled back or postponed because of COVID-19 restrictions, but the clamour for the date to be altered is likely to be undiminished. Australia's Indigenous peoples make up about 3% of the national population. They believe that high rates of unemployment, poverty and incarceration are the direct result of the dispossession and marginalisation caused by European colonisation that began in 1788. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
These are among some of the top Asia headlines you'll find right now when you visit voanews.com. Five dead after explosion at India Quarry. Afghan official says 600 freed Taliban prisoners rearrested. India launches vaccine diplomacy with gifts of COVID-19 vaccines to neighbors. Britain jails smugglers in deaths of 39 Vietnamese migrants in container. New Zealand investigates case of coronavirus community spread. You'll find expanded coverage of all these stories and so much more on Facebook at VOA Asia and at voanews.com. VOA Asia continues. I'm Jim Stevenson. India has begun sending COVID-19 vaccines to neighboring countries, as its level of vaccine production has put it at the forefront of suppliers of affordable vaccines to low- and middle-income nations urgently seeking supplies. As Anjana Pasricha reports from New Delhi, India hopes to both raise its global profile with vaccine diplomacy and win back influence in South Asia, where China has been making inroads.
This is the most precious medical cargo for countries waiting to launch COVID-19 immunization programs. Vaccines. Days after rolling out a nationwide inoculation program, India, the world's biggest vaccine producer, donated millions of doses of the British-developed AstraZeneca vaccine to Nepal, Bangladesh, Bhutan, the Maldives, Seychelles, Mauritius, and Myanmar. The affordable and easily storable vaccine being made by an Indian company in partnership with AstraZeneca is in huge demand in developing countries. The goodwill gesture won praise from neighbors such as Bangladesh.
A friend in need is a friend indeed.
Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi has emphasized that neighboring countries will be prioritized in the distribution of vaccine supplies. The initiative is called Vaccine Friendship. The vaccine diplomacy, say analysts, is a means to push back against China, which has been expanding its influence in South Asia. While China is also giving its vaccine to several countries such as Turkey, South Asian countries had sought supplies of the AstraZeneca vaccine developed in Britain.
India will want to make a point here that in this area, unlike in some others where China usually overshadows India in terms of military and economic might, in this field, in pharmaceuticals, in healthcare, in affordable healthcare, especially, India has actually a comparative edge and advantage over China. So I think that will be certainly a subtle message going around that you can depend on us.
New Delhi has also begun commercial shipments of vaccines. The first consignments have reached Brazil and Morocco. More will go to countries in Africa and South America in the coming months. Following New Delhi's approval of the AstraZeneca vaccine and one developed by an Indian company, Modi said this month that India will play a frontline role in providing vaccines.
Today, India, with not one but two Made in India vaccines, is ready to protect humanity. Being pharmacy of the world, India has supplied essential medicines to the needy across the globe in the past and is doing it today as well.
As Indian companies ramp up production to meet the huge demand, India hopes to raise its global profile by being seen as a country that will help end the pandemic.
It's a lot of this has to do with image. So the vaccine diplomacy is not about concrete, material benefits. It's about image and soft power.
There has been growing criticism of vaccine inequality. While inoculation programs are well underway in wealthy nations, developing countries are struggling to secure supplies. Anjana Pasricha for VOA News, New Delhi.
Happening now in Asia, rescue teams in China have brought to the surface 11 miners trapped in a gold mine by an explosion on January 10th. Teams had established contact with rescuers before Sunday, and they had been receiving food and supplies. A total of 22 miners were trapped about 600 meters underground. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're glad you're able to join us today on VOA Asia. Thanks for stopping by. On his first full day in office, President Joe Biden rolled out his national pandemic strategy that includes several executive actions related to vaccines and testing. Patsy Whitaker-Sawara has more on the new administration's efforts to combat the coronavirus at home and around the world.
With more than 405,000 American deaths, on Thursday, President Joe Biden launched his plan to combat the pandemic.
Our national strategy is comprehensive. It's based on science, not politics. It's based on truth, not denial. And it's detailed. Mr. Neswan is setting up the pandemic testing board.
Biden signed a series of executive actions, including a national mask mandate, testing and quarantine requirements for travelers, support to reopen schools, and protection for essential workers.
This is a wartime undertaking. Today, I'm signing an executive action to use the Defense Production Act and all other available authorities to direct all federal agencies and private industry to accelerate the making of everything that needs to protect, test, vaccinate, and take care of our people.
The U.S. is also mending ties with the global health community. White House Chief Medical Advisor Dr. Anthony Fauci on Thursday announced the U.S. is rejoining the World Health Organization and supporting the global effort to combat the pandemic.
The United States to join COVAX and support the ACT Accelerator to advance multilateral efforts for COVID-19 vaccine, therapeutic, and diagnostic distribution, equitable access, and research and development.
COVAX is a 92-nation vaccine collaboration rejected by then-President Trump in line with his America First vaccine strategy. The approach is criticized by those who point out that the virus knows no borders.
Ultimately, at the end of the day, other countries and our partners to ensure their stability and for our national security and economic interests, it's really important that we help as many countries as we can.
The renewed support and resumption of funding for WHO marks a departure from the Trump administration, who often criticized the global agency for its pandemic response.
This is a good day for WHO and a good day for global health.
More than 17 million Americans have received COVID-19 vaccines. The Biden administration is now focused on delivering 100 million shots in the first 100 days. Patsy Widakuswara, VOA News.
This news from VOA Asia. 8 Chinese bombers and 4 fighter jets entered the southwestern corner of Taiwan's air defense identification zone, and the island's defense minister said Taiwan's Air Force deployed missiles to monitor the incursion. China, which claims Taiwan as its own territory, has conducted almost daily flights over the waters in recent months. You'll find more on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. As VOA Asia continues, world leaders have congratulated Joe Biden following his inauguration last Wednesday as the 46th U.S. president. As Henry Ridgewell reports from London, many allies have especially welcomed his decision to rejoin the Paris Climate Agreement.
After 4 years of turbulent transatlantic relations, the European Union Commission head offered a warm welcome for President Joe Biden.
Once again, after 4 long years, Europe has a friend in the White House. From climate change to health, from digitalization to democracy, these are global challenges that need renewed and improved global cooperation.
British Prime Minister Boris Johnson had a warmer relationship with former President Trump. But Johnson said Wednesday he and Biden have a joint common agenda.
It's a fantastic thing for America. It's a step forward for the country that's been through a bumpy period.
There were big celebrations in Kosovo, where a street bears the name of Joe Biden's late son, Beau Biden, who worked in the country with the U.S. Justice Department following the 1999 Kosovo War. U.S. allies in the Asia-Pacific region also welcomed the new U.S. administration.
There's a lot of work for us together, whether it's on climate, on energy, on international security, and importantly regional security here in the Indo-Pacific.
Japan's Prime Minister echoed his Australian counterpart.
I hope to closely cooperate with the new president to achieve a free and open Indo-Pacific region.
That a clear reference to the perceived threat from China in the Indo-Pacific region. In Beijing, a call for a reset in relations with Washington.
We hope that the new U.S. government will view China and our relations in an objective and rational manner.
China Wednesday sanctioned outgoing former Secretary of State Mike Pompeo and dozens of other Trump officials. Biden's National Security Council called the sanctions unproductive and cynical, a response some analysts say is not surprising.
The incoming administration will also maintain a pretty tough on China stance. It's actually an era where I think we'll have some bipartisan agreement on that approach, but one that is, again, more engaged with allies in doing that.
Meanwhile, Iran's leader said the ball was in Biden's court over the future of the 2015 nuclear deal, which the U.S. president has said he wants to rejoin if Tehran meets its commitments. Russia's ambassador to the U.S. called Biden's inauguration a new chapter in relations with Washington. There was no official response from President Vladimir Putin. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
Making headlines in Asia, Thailand has rejected a new technical report on a Laos dam project, one of nine large-scale Mekong River mainstream dams integral to a controversial economic strategy of Laos to become the battery of Southeast Asia. The $2 billion project would take 8 years to complete once construction starts. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Former President Trump's diplomatic strategy included economic tariffs against China and, most recently, a change in relations with Taiwan. Now with Joe Biden in office, a shift in diplomacy is virtually certain. The president's pick to be the next Secretary of State, Antony Blinken, says his vision for restoring America's standing abroad is leadership based on humility and confidence. Blinken testified in front of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee last week, as VOA's Cindy Sain reports from Washington.
The Senate Foreign Relations Committee held a nomination hearing for former Deputy Secretary of State Antony Blinken. He laid out his vision for American leadership abroad, saying humility and confidence are flip sides of the same coin.
Humility, because we have a great deal of work to do at home to enhance our standing abroad. But we'll also act with confidence, with the confidence that America at its best still has a greater ability than any country on earth to mobilize others for the common good.
Referencing the storming of the U.S. Capitol by Trump supporters as lawmakers gathered to certify the presidential election, Democratic Senator Bob Menendez said U.S. leadership abroad is tied to respect for democracy at home.
This attack on the very foundation of our democracy delivered a tragic reminder that our ability to project power abroad is inextricably linked to the health and strength of our democracy.
On foreign policy, Blinken said he sees some common ground with the outgoing Trump administration.
I also believe that President Trump was right in taking a tougher approach to China. I disagree very much with the way that he went about it in a number of areas, but the basic principle was the right one, and I think that's actually helpful to our foreign policy.
Republican Senator Ron Johnson responded.
I think President Trump opened everybody's eyes in terms of China's malign attempt.
Some analysts said they welcome the substantive and largely non-combative tone of the hearing from Republican and Democratic senators.
I think there's a desire for a return to a more normal type of debate about foreign policy as opposed to one that where people, especially on the Hill, felt maybe they weren't consulted as closely either by the Trump administration or Obama administration. A real genuine effort to have a new sort of dialogue, I think, about foreign policy and to make it less, you know, in terms of chaotic and less uncertain as we've seen over the last couple of years.
Most senators appeared to agree with another analyst on Blinken's foreign policy experience as a former Deputy Secretary of State.
Antony Blinken is in my view, is an experienced and capable individual who brings deep knowledge on a lot of the issues we confront. And so I would hope and expect that he would be confirmed on a bipartisan vote without too much delay.
Several senators said they hoped for a quick, full Senate vote to confirm Blinken because the challenges facing the United States, including issues with Iran, China, Russia, and North Korea, will not wait. Cindy Sain, VOA News, Washington.
A NASA-Boeing partnership took its next steps toward deep space exploration. Two commercial spaceflight companies reached new heights, and China says foreign scientists may inspect lunar samples it recently collected. VOA's Rosh Arabasadi brings us the week in space.
From a launch pad at NASA's Stennis Space Center in Mississippi, the Aerospace Agency tested its space launch system. Rockets fired for roughly 8 minutes, generating 725 metric tons of thrust while guzzling more than 2,600 cubic meters of fuel to simulate internal conditions for liftoff. The project paired NASA with Boeing in a mission seen as a vital step before a debut unmanned launch later this year under NASA's Artemis program. It's also welcome news as the space launch system is 3 years behind schedule and nearly $3 billion over budget. Boeing is also scheduled this year to deliver 6 new solar arrays to the International Space Station. Boeing's John Mulholland explains why.
These solar arrays that we're going to install are going to be about half the size of the existing solar arrays that we have on the International Space Station. But because of the advances in technology over the years, they're going to provide about twice the power in just half of the area that the existing solar arrays cover.
The arrays will provide electricity to sustain systems and equipment while augmenting other power to continue experiments in the station's unique microgravity environment. China this week announced plans to share access to the lunar samples collected from its recent Chang'e 5 lunar exploration mission. Agency spokesman Pei Xiaoyu.
The China National Space Administration encourages international joint research on the moon samples. The purpose is to promote the international sharing of science search results. I believe that foreign scientists will have the opportunity to study these moon samples together with Chinese scientists.
Pei went on to say that China is open to international cooperation with all countries. Finally this week, two players in the commercial space travel business saw success. In California skies, Virgin Galactic's 21-meter Launcher 1 rocket reached space after release from beneath a wing of a Boeing 747. It carried a cluster of small satellites developed as part of a NASA educational program with universities in the United States. Meanwhile, Blue Origin's New Shepard reusable launch vehicle made a successful test launch and landing in remote West Texas. After a brief trip to the Kármán line, the altitude at which space begins, both vehicle and capsule landed back on Earth with onboard test dummy Mannequin Skywalker. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News, Washington.
On the tennis courts down under, the second annual ATP Cup will be held in Melbourne, Australia, and it's a scaled-down version from the event which was played across Australia last year. Craig Gabriel reports that the draw for the 2021 version has been held in Melbourne.
12 months ago, Tennis Australia and the ATP staged the inaugural ATP Cup. The event is based in Australia and was hosted in Brisbane, Perth and Sydney, which held the finals. There were 24 nations in the event and the success was overwhelming. Now, due to the COVID-19 crisis, this year's event is a more abridged version. There are just 12 nations and everything will be played in Melbourne, which will host the Australian Open just 3 days after the ATP Cup and 4 other tournaments, all at the same venue, concluding. The draw for the ATP Cup has been done and the 12 nations were split into 4 groups. The 4 top nations were allocated a group and then the remaining 8 countries were randomly drawn. Group A is headed by defending champion nation Serbia, led by Novak Djokovic, and includes Germany and Canada. Group B is topped by last year's finalists, Spain, with Rafa Nadal, and the group includes Greece and host nation Australia. Group C has Austria, with US Open champion Dominic Thiem, and includes Italy and France, while the last group, Group D, is headed by Russia, with Daniil Medvedev, and that section includes Argentina and Japan. Some of the matchups in the round-robin section will include Djokovic against Alexander Zverev, Nadal against Stefanos Tsitsipas, Thiem facing Gael Monfils, and Medvedev taking on Diego Schwartzman. Craig Gabriel, VOA Sports, Melbourne.
That's our program for today. Thanks for joining us on VOA Asia. Continue online at Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. You may also find our full-length 25-minute programs anytime you like at voanews.com. We also thank our managing editor, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team. Ira Melman, Doug Bernard, Keith Lane, and Amy Hybels. I'm Jim Stevenson. We hope you have a wonderful day ahead. Be safe. Be well.